The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Melinda George, president of the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, NCTAF. Melinda George is the president of NCTAF. She is charged to build a research-based framework of policies and practices that ensures every child has access to competent, caring teachers in a school that is organized for success. Tell us what NCTAF is, what the commission does. Tell us a little bit about your mission.
Sure. And your timing is terrific because NCTAF just came out with a new report yesterday called What Matters Now? A New Compact for Teaching and Learning. The reason I mention the report is that NCTAF is actually a 22-year-old organization. We were founded to be about teaching. We recognized very early on, back in the mid-90s, that the key to great education for students is the strength of the teachers that are working with them. And so we took the conversation back then from being about what teachers are doing wrong to how we can support teachers and really help them to do more for students and thrive in their profession. We have worked over 20 years, always with teachers at the heart of the work that we do. But we thought that it was really critical to reconvene the commission about 18 months ago to do an investigation of what's happening in education and to think about, instead of then, what the question was is what matters most. Today, we're asking the question of what matters now. How do we prepare students by supporting teachers in schools organized for success? And if that sounds similar to what you described as the mission of the organization, it's because the mission hasn't changed. And frankly, the recommendations haven't changed a whole lot. What has changed is the need for students to be prepared differently. And we're still working in a school system and districts across this country that are organized the same as they were before and decades before that. So we need to change and take advantage of a moment in time when the education tides are really shifting and we can gather a collective will. And that's what we need right now. We need a will to make the change in education that will help all our students.
So Melinda, that sounds really interesting, this report. And I like the focus on what we need now. So what are the top, say, three things, the top three changes that the commission found that would be most impactful right now?
So I think the first thing is that we kind of turn the way schools are organized on its head. And we said, let's start with what students need first. And so we encourage states and districts. We really think that's the place where there can be change right now. To start there, we know a lot more about education than we've ever known before. We know about how students learn. We know what motivates them. We have great new technologies that can support their work. We need to embed those things and say, okay, so if that's how students learn, then how should teachers be teaching and what can we do to prepare them? So I think that's the first thing. The second, I would say, is we really need to increase the pipeline of teaching. Teaching as a profession should be one of the strongest, most powerful professions in this country. And right now, it's not. And people, and by people I mean business leaders, community leaders, parents, principals, district and state officials, need to recognize teaching and elevate the profession so that we get folks in the classroom who are passionate, smart, and advocates for children. We also need to ensure diversity of those educators. Our demographics, and I think this leads to the third, our demographics have changed unbelievably in this country. And we need to have a teaching force that not only mirrors those students as the mentors and the leaders that are teaching them, but also is ready to understand what those students need and to support them in their work. And so we have to have a real focus on race and equity in this country and how we can support teachers in that.
So you mentioned your second point was around elevating the profession of teaching to help build a stronger pipeline of teachers. Is that really what you mean, is that we need to pay them more? I mean, we've heard for a long time that teachers don't make enough. And you see a lot of studies. Is that at the heart of it?
You know, pay them more, absolutely. Teacher compensation should be equivalent with a profession that demands smart, rigorous learning. But it's more than just pay them more. There are so many things that we can do, and this is one of the things that the NICTAF report really says, is there are conditions around teaching that the rest of us take for granted in whatever professions we do, but teachers don't get. So a big thing is the use of time. We as a country need to look at how time is managed in schools and provide teachers with more time to collaborate with one another, to work with their students, to do research and understand. We expect teachers to go in every day without ever giving them the time to learn more about their practice and to grow as professionals. The one other piece I would say in terms of time is that professional development, which is a term that makes people's eyes glaze over, but again, the rest of us have it in our careers all the time. Teachers need that time to go for targeted, meaningful, relevant professional development for their practice, what they're focused on and how they're trying to help kids. So I think time is a big issue. And collaboration is a huge issue. And again, NICTAF has been really an advocate for finding more time for collaboration. We supported a study, the release of a study, the Teaching and Learning International Survey, which was produced by the OECD. One of the things it found is that teachers spend more time than any other teachers from any other country actually in front of the classroom doing instruction. They spend 27 hours a week, whereas the average across countries is about 19 hours. Imagine if teachers had that time back, those 8 hours a week that they could actually spend improving their own practice and growing as a professional. So time and collaboration are really critical too.
Today, our guest is Melinda George, President, NECTAF, National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. Now, Melinda, I want to take a step back of something you said earlier in regards to our schools today. Time and time again, studies have shown that the years our children, and I have four children, and spend in our schools are significant about where they turn out and where they end up as adults. Sure. So what is happening in our nation's schools that, you know, make you believe that major changes are needed? Certainly the teachers is one, but what about the schools in general?
I'm very optimistic about the changes that can be made, because one of the things, again, that we find is that there has been progress made in a lot of classrooms, a lot of schools, even districts across this country, but it's very uneven. And so where I see the change needed is in the direction that some of these schools, to a deeper learning approach where learning is authentic. Students are actually working with members of their community. They're out practicing what they're learning in real world situations. Students should be the creators of their learning. Teachers are really taking on new roles in the work that they're doing. No longer is it stand at the front of the classroom and tell the students what they need to know. Now it's about figuring out where students' passions are and helping them to channel that into what they need to know. You're going to find a much more engaged student if they are applying algebra in terms of a subject that they're really passionate about. So I think that this idea around improving schools to be more authentic, project-based, and really inspiring students to be the critical thinkers, to be the collaborators with their peers, and to really direct their own learning is what's going to make successful learners in schools and then successful adults when they're out of school.
You know, we have the honor of interviewing some of this nation's, Washington, D.C. In particular, most successful women. And, you know, at least 50% of the time, these women have named, you know, their mentor being a teacher that inspired them, encouraged them, set them on their way to be able to get this path of success. Mm-hmm. Teachers are extremely important to the outcome.
Teachers have to believe in their students. They have to believe that their students can learn. I actually started out my career as a teacher, And what I found was, and I taught here in the district, I didn't care so much about the solar system or multiplying fractions. What I really cared about were those kids. And I think that that piece is what resonates with all those folks that name a teacher as a mentor, because it's not about somebody who really pushed me to get better in objective 2.7. It's about somebody who believed that I could learn it and pushed me to keep growing what I was doing.
And it's equal in the other direction. We've had a small percentage of our guests talk about how a teacher sat them down and said, hey, you know, you should be a nurse, or you should, not that nursing isn't bad, but they wanted to do a much, you know, be an engineer or go into a field that traditionally was not seen as being a field for a woman. And they were discouraged. So, you know, this investment is important from two perspectives. Mm-hmm. And not only it can go negative if we don't do it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am the mom of two teenage daughters. And one of the things that I've been so excited about is that they're really interested in figuring out what path they want to take. But I have one daughter who really doesn't know exactly what she wants to do, and one who thinks that she knows exactly where she's going. And my encouragement to both is try new things and figure out where your passion lies before you put your stake in the ground that that's the direction you're going. And I think that's what a great teacher can do, is to really say, you know what, you think this is where you're going, and we're going to support you toward that if that continues to be where you want to go. But let's explore a whole bunch of other things in the process and make sure that you're really feeling excited about where you end up going.
My mom was a teacher, and she was a wonderful teacher, but she guided my sister and I not to go into mm-hmm. the teaching profession. And it wasn't because she didn't love it. It was because she felt that it was an undervalued profession. Mm-hmm. But she came from the generation that if women worked at all, they were teachers or nurses. As more and more women are having greater opportunity in non-traditional fields, where fields that women haven't traditionally been, has that hurt the pipeline of teachers even more?
I'm not sure other opportunities are the barrier to more kids becoming teachers. I think it's your first point about the undervaluing of the profession that is keeping really talented kids from joining the profession. When I started teaching, I was 22 years old. I had 29 kids in a classroom. I had no mentor or induction support. I would go to school at 6:30 in the morning. I'd work till midnight. My college roommate, who I lived with at that time, had to do an intervention. She said, you don't do any of the things that the rest of us who are 22 years old do. You're always at that school. And the problem is that I've done a lot of different things since teaching. There's never been one that is more meaningful to me. There's never been anything that provided me more satisfaction. I still tell stories about my kids from 25 years ago. But I think that we lose teachers because teaching is really hard and we don't give them the support they need to succeed. And so if you watch teachers struggling, not being paid enough, being at school long hours, the summers off is a myth because most of them need to do other jobs to make up for their teaching salaries. And then you put them in a classroom and you don't give them any chance to talk to their peers. And you don't encourage them to go out and take more courses that are really relevant to what they want to do and to grow as a profession, then that's what keeps people from entering teaching. So we have a job to do. We've got to turn teaching into the profession that people want to be a part of. And then you can marry that passion, which is why most people go in, passion for helping, passion for kids, with the respect and the importance that the job really holds.
We're speaking with Melinda George, President NICTAF. Coming up, we'll ask Melinda about the role of the federal government in education. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Melinda George, President of the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, or NCTAF.
So, Melinda, you've now spent most of your career in associations, and you currently lead, you're the president of NCTAF. One of the things that Aileen and I, as we've done research for these shows, there's startlingly few women executives at the head of corporations. The one area, though, that there seems to be more is in nonprofits, which is interesting. And I don't know, I'd love to hear your view on why that is. I mean, my speculation might be that women tend to be drawn to a mission, and a lot of nonprofits are really focused on their mission. But it's a hard job. You have all of the same pressures and leadership challenges and day-to-day management problems that anybody running any organization or corporation would have. And then you have the funding issue where you've got to go find funding all the time.
Yeah. So I think the key to nonprofit work is the work around a mission. It's really exciting to go to work every day to do something good for a cause you believe in. That's kind of everybody's dream. So I do know a lot of women heads of nonprofits, and perhaps that is that passion side coming out. And it's why I love what I do. It is hard. So just like a corporation, you still have to run a business. And the funding is really hard in a field that's very crowded. So there's a lot of not-for-profits out there right now. And so the other piece you have to do is to identify your niche. What is it about your organization that's different and unique? And why should an organization, a funder, philanthropic funder or a corporate funder pick your organization? And then how do you define impact? So everybody that gives you money wants to know what they're getting as a return on their investment. And as a national organization, it can be challenging to get down to things that people want to count. People want to count test scores. People want to count numbers of hits on websites. That's not really what we're about. We're about changing a profession and elevating and improving it. And it takes a lot of time. So if a goal for us was that we increase the pipeline, we get more really wonderful teachers to come into schools, that's not going to happen by the end of a grant that I have that's over a 2-year period. And so I do. I think it's really challenging work. I tell people all the time to know what you're getting into. This is, you can be as mission-driven as you want, but you also need to know, I don't sleep a lot. partly because I'm busy, partly because I worry. I want to make sure that our organization is as successful as possible because we're doing it to make a difference. And that's a lot of responsibility.
Would you recommend if there's a young listener, young woman out there, or maybe a young man who wanted to go into nonprofit work, would you recommend it?
Absolutely. I mean, you do make a difference. You feel good about what you do every day. I have said a couple times, I have 2 daughters. I struggled as they were growing up. Should I be a full-time working mom? And what does that mean? Yesterday, when we released our report, both my daughters came to the event and came up to me afterwards and gave me a huge hug and said they were proud of me and that they didn't really know what I did before, but that they loved it and they loved being part of it. And actually, they got up at 6 a.m. to come work the registration table to help me. And I thought, you know what, maybe all of this struggle over whether to work or not to work showed my girls that you should go out and go after the things that matter to you, even if they're hard.
So earlier in the show, we talked a little bit about mentoring, but you brought up your girls. They have a great example in you, your mom. They're lucky. But does your program also look at the kids and having mentor programs for them? I mean, the study does talk about hands-on learning, actual, you know, real-world exposure to careers. Do you think in our school system we should have some mentoring from industry?
So, for 2 purposes. One, I think mentors are amazing role models for kids. And I think kids need those role models, particularly in those communities where their role models might not be as accessible because they're working so hard to put food on the table every day. So I think having role models be there for kids is critical. I also think that it's a support to the teachers. We're trying to build real-world authentic learning. So bring in people that can have that real-world experiences to share with kids. We did a program called Learning Studios where we really brought in outside content experts. These were volunteers from companies who we helped facilitate their working in the schools. And when interviewing the kids at the end of a year of Learning Studios, they said they were more interested in science and math because of the volunteers who came into the classroom. They said that their favorite days were when they got engaged in those questions with those outside content experts, which was what we called the volunteers from the corporate world. And so I think mentors are incredibly important to kids in the same way that they're important to adults.
Sometimes the traditional learning system, you learn from books, but then applying it is totally different. And you're talking about STEM. You mentioned STEM earlier. You know, I think that's some of the challenges of getting our students, male or female, into the STEM degrees, because taking what they're learning in the classroom and then applying it and learning that these types of engineers degrees can make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. How can we get industry, how would you recruit? This is an opportunity to recruit, corporations, individuals to get involved.
So interestingly, we've had companies say to us that having their employees be able to volunteer in these programs is a perk for their employees. We're seeing a workforce coming into corporations that service and volunteerism means something. And so to be able to be given days to not be at work, but to be mentoring and volunteering in a school is actually something that employees see as a perk. Well, that's a great thing. I do think that corporations need to also recognize how critical what's going on in schools is. And it's a place to invest. It's no longer just investing to do a good thing. You're investing in really making sure that the people that are coming out of schools today are going to be the people that you want working for you tomorrow. And so, you know, we talked about funding earlier. I'll put in the plug. I think it's great for corporations to think about the return on investment of supporting schools, supporting research, supporting advocacy around education so that they're someday getting the employees that they want.
That's one heck of a way to change that difference between that zip code issue, because volunteering and giving back starts with us, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, you have two young daughters and you kind of did a jungle gym twist through your career. If you were to go back and see Melinda today, you know, going to that classroom, what advice would you have for her to achieve the level of success you've had both in your personal and professional life?
I would have two. I would say try it all out. You gotta give yourself the chance to explore new opportunities, to figure out who you want to be before you put your stake in the ground around one particular direction. And also recognize that that direction may change. Nothing today is forever, so you can move and change as you feel motivated to do so. The second thing I would say is build your network. I've been successful in what I've done because I've had incredible people around me who have supported me, who have challenged me, who have pushed me, and I still, to this day, go back to some of my earliest bosses and ask for their advice, and I still look to the support that I've had as the reason that I've gotten to where I am today.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have been talking with Melinda George, president of the National Commission on Teaching and America's Future, NCTAF. I want to thank you for sharing your incredible journey and advice with us, Melinda. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on FederalNewsRadio.com at 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Melinda George, president of the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, or NCTEF.
So, Melinda, let's take a step back and change our focus a bit to you. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up. What was your family like, your parents? Did you have somebody early on who was a formative influence on your choice of career?
So I grew up in Baltimore. I was the only girl. I have three brothers, which I wouldn't change being the only girl for anything in the world. I think my biggest influence was from my amazing parents, both of whom are very service-oriented and really instilled that in myself and my brothers. One of the things that I think they did for me was to really allow me to be a girl and to value and honor that and push that. So I did have the great fortune of going to an all-girls school where I learned that I could be whatever I wanted to be. And my parents supported that. My brothers went to co-ed schools, and my parents knew that having that opportunity to be in an all-girls school would really help me.
So, Melinda, I got to ask you, why teaching?
Because teaching was what I wanted to do. So back to Gigi's question earlier about, you know, is teaching the right profession for girls, for women? Is it undervalued? For me, it was what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with kids. I wanted to work in a district that was an urban district. I wanted that chance to build relationship that kids would remember the way that I remembered my own teachers growing up. I loved to learn. I had teachers that would do really amazing projects with us. And I remember making, for an international fair, rice pudding and multiplying the recipe by 16, thinking that was how much. And I brought in vats of rice pudding. And my teachers were so excited. There was no eye rolling about my 16 vats of rice pudding. They served it to everybody in the school, all the parents that came to pick up kids. I don't know, the folks that were there in the playground playing after school. But teachers meant a lot to me growing up. I love kids. I get teased about, you know, that I try and pick up babies in church. And the other thing that I will say is that I had the chance to, I really thought I wanted to be a primary school teacher for second grade. And I had a great mentor in college who said during my teaching certification program, you know, you really should try older kids. And I was like, oh no, I don't want older kids. Well, it was the smartest advice anyone ever gave me. Again, push yourself. Try something you think that's a little different than you expect it to be. I went to student teach in a fourth grade classroom, and I've never been so excited. I mean, first graders were amazing. It was great to teach them to read and write. But the stories about I love my mom, soccer is fun. To go into a fourth grade classroom where the kids are writing about the sparkling sun glistening over the lake and you're understanding their emotions and what they care about, it was so exciting. And I never looked back. I taught fourth grade, then fifth grade. And honestly, if I had kept going and teaching, I would have been a middle school teacher because I think that's where kids need the most support as they try and grow from being little kids into big kids.
Now, you taught fourth and fifth grade in the district. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, there's many different zip codes and many different levels of schools in the district, unfortunately. So where did you, was it part of the inner city? Where did you teach?
I taught in a wonderful school in Northwest. What was really unique about our school was that it was close to many of the embassies. And so we had the largest ESL, English as a second language, population in the city. At the time that I was there, we had 41 different native languages spoken. So my classroom included 7 kids who, when they came into the fourth grade, didn't speak a word of English. And they didn't speak languages that I had ever studied. And so we had this amazing journey of trying to figure out how to teach a fourth grade curriculum. Again, no early teaching support. There was no mentorship in different languages, using drawing, using sign language. And it was what was incredible to me is that lunchtime in that school was like the being at the UN. I mean, and I used to walk around the lunchroom and I would see kids with just what was in their lunch was so different. And yet it was so normal to them. These were kids of different colors, different religions, different languages, different customs. And that was their normal day. I mean, what a great place to teach. What I would wish for any kid, really.
What a wonderful place for other children to experience the real world. Because, yep. You know, a lot of times your neighborhood is not as mixed, right. and the real world is. So tell me, what was it like? You know, we read so much about the District of Columbia, you know, what's going on with the teaching system. What was it like working as a teacher in the District of Columbia?
So the District of Columbia has grown a lot in 25 years since I was there. I think one of the biggest things that was hard for me was that the school was very distinct from the district offices at that time, and yet we still needed the district offices for a lot of things, and there wasn't a system of support for new teachers. If you had to get a school bus for a field trip, you might as well give up. I mean, we stopped using school buses because there just wasn't good communication between the district offices and the school offices. But I had an amazing principal, and she had her teachers back. And I think that was really a great place for me as a brand new employee in the work world to have a boss who believed in her teachers and was going to stick behind them no matter what happened. So the one thing I would also mention is that DC has undergone a huge transformation that's really exciting. It's gone from being a district that used to be criticized the most to being one that's really looked at as making innovative moves around teacher compensation, teacher professional development. The chancellor is actually one of Nick Taft's commissioners, and so she has brought to this city the idea that it begins with your teaching force, and she knows a lot about, it was why we wanted her to be on our commission so badly, because she knows about supporting teachers and making change from within. And so, you know, I sometimes say, and actually my 17-year-old asked me the other day if I would go back to teaching. And I think it's a real challenge for me to consider that. I think we're making strides toward improving the profession, but we have a long way to go. But then I look at a leader like Kaya and I think, you know, if I could come and teach under her, it would be exciting to be back in this district again.
Today, our guest is Melinda George, President Nick Taff. Melinda, after teaching, mm-hmm. you took a complete twist in your career and you began working for an association, not the one that you're currently at. You were at the State Educational Technology Directors Association. So tell us about that organization, but more importantly, why you decided to kind of take that left turn.
So it actually started a little bit before CETA. I often describe my resume as looking like a pinball machine. The good news is that every time the ball hit the new lever, it made a ding. But I left teaching to go back and get a master's degree in public administration, fully expecting to go back into educational administration. And I kind of got bit by the policy bug. And that was really the change. I did do an internship when I was in grad school in the steel industry. Talk about a shift. And I had a great opportunity to really learn how to be an advocate, how to lobby, I was right in the center of Washington. I also knew it wasn't where my heart was, and I needed to get back into education. And so I got the chance to combine both. I went to work for the Software Publishers Association and built their state education technology advocacy program. And then I had the chance to be the first executive director of the State Education Technology Directors Association. Most of my career has been in association management. Talk about the collective power, bringing together organizations that usually compete to actually leverage and help rise all boats has been a really exciting process. And CETA, we started that organization. It didn't exist before that fall that we began. We started with no members, no clear mission, and about $170,000 from a seed grant. And we grew it into an organization where we watched leaders develop because they'd had the chance to work together in the association. We watched them grow from understanding their role as an individual to understanding their role as part of a bigger population in their state departments of education. And I think that's the power of associations.
Today, our guest is Melinda George, President, National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, NCTAF. Coming up, we'll ask Melinda about how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, the 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Melinda George, President of the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future, or NCTAF.
So, Melinda, you've now spent most of your career in associations, and you currently lead. You're the president of NCTAF. One of the things that Aileen and I, as we've done research for these shows, there's startlingly few women executives at the head of corporations. The one area, though, that there seems to be more is in nonprofits. Which is interesting. And I don't know, I'd love to hear your view on why that is. I mean, my speculation might be that women tend to be drawn to a mission, and a lot of nonprofits are really focused on their mission. But it's a hard job. You have all of the same pressures and leadership challenges and day-to-day management problems that anybody running any organization or corporation would have. And then you have the funding issue where you've got to go find funding all the time.
Yeah. So I think the key to nonprofit work is the work around a mission. It's really exciting to go to work every day to do something good for a cause you believe in. That's kind of everybody's dream. So I do know a lot of women heads of nonprofits, and perhaps that is that passion side coming out. And it's why I love what I do. It is hard. So just like a corporation, you still have to run a business. And the funding is really hard in a field that's very crowded. So there's a lot of not-for-profits out there right now. And so the other piece you have to do is to identify your niche. What is it about your organization that's different and unique? And why should an organization, a funder, philanthropic funder or a corporate funder, pick your organization? And then how do you define impact? So everybody that gives you money wants to know what they're getting as a return on their investment. And as a national organization, it can be challenging to get down to things that people want to count. People want to count test scores. People want to count numbers of hits on websites. That's not really what we're about. We're about changing a profession and elevating and improving it. And it takes a lot of time. So if a goal for us was that we increase the pipeline, we get more really wonderful teachers to come into schools, that's not going to happen by the end of a grant that I have that's over a two-year period. And so I do. I think it's really challenging work. I tell people all the time to know what you're getting into. This is, you can be as mission driven as you want, but you also need to know, I don't sleep a lot, partly because I'm busy, partly because I worry. I want to make sure that our organization is as successful as possible because we're doing it to make a difference. And that's a lot of responsibility.
Would you recommend, if there's a young listener, young woman out there, or maybe a young man who wanted to go into nonprofit work, would you recommend it?
Absolutely. I mean, you do make a difference. You feel good about what you do every day. I have said a couple times, I have two daughters. I struggled as they were growing up. Should I be a full-time working mom? And what does that mean? Yesterday, when we released our report, both my daughters came to the event and came up to me afterwards and gave me a huge hug and said they were proud of me and that they didn't really know what I did before, but that they loved it and they loved being part of it. And actually, they got up at 6 a.m. to come work the registration table to help me. And I thought, you know what, maybe all of this struggle over whether to work or not to work showed my girls that you should go out and go after the things that matter to you, even if they're hard.
So earlier in the show, we talked a little bit about mentoring. But you brought up your girls. They have a great example in you, your mom. They're lucky. But does your program also look at the kids and having mentor programs for them? I mean, the study does talk about hands-on learning, actual, you know, real-world exposure to careers. Do you think in our school system we should have some mentoring from industry?
So for two purposes. One, I think mentors are amazing role models for kids. And I think kids need those role models, particularly in those communities where their role models might not be as accessible because they're working so hard to put food on the table every day. So I think having role models be there for kids is critical. I also think that it's a support to the teachers. We're trying to build real-world authentic learning. So bring in people that can have that real-world experiences to share with kids. We did a program called Learning Studios where we really brought in outside content experts. These were volunteers from companies who we helped facilitate their working in the schools. And when interviewing the kids at the end of a year of Learning Studios, they said they were more interested in science and math because of the volunteers who came into the classroom. They said that their favorite days were when they got engaged in those questions with those outside content experts, which was what we called the volunteers from the corporate world. And so I think mentors are incredibly important to kids in the same way that they're important to adults.
Sometimes the traditional learning system, you learn from books, but then applying it is totally different. And you're talking about STEM. You mentioned STEM earlier. You know, I think that's some of the challenges of getting our students, male or female, into the STEM degrees, because taking what they're learning in the classroom and then applying it and learning that these types of engineers degrees can make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. How can we get industry, how would you recruit? This is an opportunity to recruit, corporations, individuals to get involved.
So interestingly, we've had companies say to us that having their employees be able to volunteer in these programs is a perk for their employees. We're seeing a workforce coming into corporations that service and volunteerism means something. And so to be able to be given days to not be at work, but to be mentoring and volunteering in a school is actually something that employees see as a perk. Well, that's a great thing. I do think that corporations need to also recognize how critical what's going on in schools is. And it's a place to invest. It's no longer just investing to do a good thing. You're investing in really making sure that the people that are coming out of schools today are going to be the people that you want working for you tomorrow. And so, you know, we talked about funding earlier. I'll put in the plug. I think it's great for corporations to think about the return on investment of supporting schools, supporting research, supporting advocacy around education so that they're someday getting the employees that they want.
That's one heck of a way to change that difference between that zip code issue, because volunteering and giving back starts with us, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, you have two young daughters and you kind of did a jungle gym twist through your career. If you were to go back and see Melinda today, you know, going to that classroom, what advice would you have for her to achieve the level of success you've had both in your personal and professional life?
I would have two. I would say try it all out. You gotta give yourself the chance to explore new opportunities, to figure out who you want to be before you put your stake in the ground around one particular direction. And also recognize that that direction may change. Nothing today is forever. So you can move and change as you feel motivated to do so. The second thing I would say is build your network. I've been successful in what I've done because I've had incredible people around me who have supported me, who have challenged me, who have pushed me. And I still, to this day, go back to some of my earliest bosses and ask for their advice. And I still look to the support that I've had as the reason that I've gotten to where I am today.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have been talking with Melinda George, president of the National Commission on Teaching and America's Future, NCTAF. I want to thank you for sharing your incredible journey and advice with us, Melinda. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.